We start hour number two by having a conversation with an NFL insider for CBS Sports, CBSSports.com. He appears every Sunday on the NFL Today during the regular season and the playoffs, and he does so from a multi-million dollar set that you've seen. It looks amazing. He is a good friend of the program. He is co-host of Inside Access on 105.7 The Fan in Baltimore. He is Jason Lockenfora, JLC. How are you?
Wow. That might have been the best introduction ever, Jim, which is saying something, because you've rolled out some dandy ones for me before, but wow, I feel warm and fuzzy all over.
My brother, I'm hyped on you. I'm always hyped to have you on, so you know it. Jason Lockenfora, my guest. JLC, what about the NFL trade deadline? Let me start right there.
Yeah.
The NFL trade deadline, though, is very different from the NBA trade deadline and the MLB trade deadline in terms of trades and big names moving. Jason, why is that, and what was your reaction to what you saw yesterday?
You know, I think part of it inherently has just been cultural. There's been this sort of lingering old school thought that it's hard to make football trades because it's 11 on 11 plus special teams, and you know, is schemes that must be learned and new ways of thinking that must be digested, and you know, that all takes some time, and there's something to that. I mean, remember when the 49ers acquired Garoppolo? I don't think he played for at least 3 weeks. It might have been four while he learned, you know, while he practiced, while he learned what guys could do, while he absorbed the playbook. So I think there's still some lingering sentiment to that. And then obviously we're in a pandemic right now, and there's not a burning desire across all of sports for owners to spend more money right now. You know, I mean, baseball's talking about its nuclear winter. And the NBA doesn't know when its season is going to start. And the NFL doesn't know how these playoffs are going to go off and what those revenues will look like. And will the Super Bowl definitely be on time? And what will the offseason look like? So, you know, the teams that had salary to dump, in many cases, chose to view those as football trades where we're going to maximize value rather than what they were, which is a way to clear money off the books. And the acquiring teams, the potential contenders, we're like, hey, we'll take that salary off your hands, but you got to help us out with some of that money, and you're not getting a first, a second, a third round pick for that guy. It's not happening. He's a rental for us, and he's a high cost rental at that. So the sort of market forces did not align.
It's an excellent explanation. Jason Lockenfora is joining us. All right, so let's talk about some individual situations. I had Jordan Wilkins of the Colts on, JLC, in the first hour. He had more than 100 yards from scrimmage. He had a touchdown in that win over Detroit. Now, their defense is playing at a really high level. You've written about this for CBSSports.com. How much of the credit goes to DeForest Buckner, and how far can they go with that defense?
I mean, I think a lot of the credit. I mean, he anchors like few people can, and he's, you know, a rare breed of defensive tackle who can penetrate the pocket, who can collapse it, who can do it himself in that regard, and then who's obviously exceptional against the run. And you think of all these blockbuster trades that have happened and how much, you know, the Raiders got for Khalil Mack and how much, you know, Amari Cooper and what Laremy Tunsil went for. I mean, a mid-first-round pick for Buckner, who's 25? I mean, yeah, you had to pay him, but the Colts had a lot of money to spend. Andrew Luck retired. You know, they hadn't gone big in free agency in a while. He's an absolute difference maker. I mean, that run defense is 20 yards a game better, and it's the same scheme. It's a lot of the same guys. Yeah, they're a little healthier at linebacker. The secondary, they brought in some guys who maybe are a little shorter tacklers who keep people from, you know, limiting how often they get past the third level and really break off long runs. But no, they don't have to blitz at all. They sit back. They play zone almost three-quarters of the time because they know with Buckner there and you know, Justin Houston still brings something off the edge, they don't have to devote numbers to affect the quarterback enough. It's kind of vanilla. It's not super sexy what they're doing over there, but it's been highly effective.
Jason Lockenfora joining us once again. All right, so they're at home, Jason, against Baltimore. Baltimore's got to go without Ronnie Stanley and Tyree Phillips on the offensive line. You certainly could argue that Lamar Jackson has been good, but not what he was last year. The loss is on the line. How big of a blow is that for them, and how do you think they'll adjust?
I think they'll be fine at left tackle. I think Orlando Brown going from the right side to the left side. Now, Orlando Brown was a hell of a college left tackle, and will he be everything Ronnie Stanley is at his best? Maybe not, but they're not going to have to alter what they do. The problem becomes the right side, where you know now it's DJ Fluker at right tackle instead of an all-pro or pro bowler in Orlando Brown, And right guard, they're going to have to probably rotate some guys around through practice and maybe a little bit in games before they figure out who the best replacement for Phillips is. The Ravens have had a very, from the point Ronnie Stanley gets hurt in that game and Judon gets ejected, it's been a bizarre week. I mean, Marlon Humphrey has COVID. He's been fighting with the media a little bit about, the regulations for what players should and shouldn't be doing. They don't really have a linebacker to speak of right now because they're all going to miss practice this week because they were close contacts of Marlon's. It's going to be a very strange week of practice. Sorry about that. Copper.
Is that Copper?
He's a big Ravens fan, so, he's not happy with the state of affairs. Jim, it's a tough week for them, and they're facing an opponent that doesn't do anything all that remarkable offensively, but when Rivers protects the football, that defense can carry the day.
Jason, is that Copper?
I think I'm all right now.
It's Copper, though, right?
That's Copper. Yeah, one bad ACL and the mouth to back it up.
He's a warrior, man. He's the best. Jason, looking forward to joining us. All right, so as you pointed out on CBSSports.com, the Steelers, though, Jason, they were down 10 in the first half. They ran only 20 plays in that first half. Baltimore holds the ball for over 20 minutes in that half. Yeah, Pittsburgh comes back and they win.
Yeah.
How impressed are you with what they did and really what they've done over the course of the season?
Super impressed. And that's another game where they're undefeated. You can't say, oh, they didn't play anybody. They played a good team. And Tennessee the week before that was a good team. And the Steelers didn't play close to their A game for 60 minutes. They were dominated in the first half. And they won. And they won on the road. And they won overcoming a 10-point margin. And they won despite the other team rushing for 265 yards and them rushing for like nothing. And Connor basically being out of the game the whole second half because it was all five wide, hurry up, empty set. And, yeah, they still won. I mean, it was Lamar had a poor game, and those four turnovers certainly were the difference. I mean, that was the biggest factor. The Steelers, I think, are one of the few truly balanced teams in the NFL. They can beat you with the run. They can beat you with the pass. They can beat you with their defense. They can beat you with special teams. I think Kansas City can do that. I'm not sure anybody else in the AFC is in that category. And on the other side, I'm tempted to put Tampa there, but I don't know about anybody else because they all have their warts either offensively or defensively, or in some cases, kicking special teams.
Talking to Jason Lockenfora for a few more moments. JLC, since you mentioned Tampa, what does the arrival of Antonio Brown say about them? And then what do you make of Tom Brady going out of his way not only to fight for Brown but to bring him back into his home?
Yeah, I mean, I reported that 2 weeks ago on the NFL Today, and this past Sunday added even more to it, which is that not only is he going to be living there in the guest house or whatever, but that Tom Brady has vouched for his availability, for his temperament, for his attitude, for his off-field decision-making. Like, what time does he have to be there for COVID testing? Oh, yeah, he'll be there. I guarantee it, because I'm either driving him or my driver's driving him, but he's getting there. And what time does he have to be for meetings? And what time does he have to be in the facility? And what time would he have to be for treatment? And what's he going to be up to when he leaves the facility? I mean, he really gave across-the-board assurances that he's having a bad day. I'll get Tony Robbins on the phone with him. Like, he needs a massage. I got it covered. Like, he needs extra whatever. We got it. And the moment that fails or the moment that something happens to where he, Antonio Brown has an incident on the field or off the field, it's not going to be three strikes and you're out. It's going to be one and done. And that was made very clear to Tom Brady from Bruce Arians and other in that organization. In terms of what it says about them, it says about them that they're willing to win at all costs. That's a person whose behavior, even what's known, what's been captured on his own social media feed or what he's said or what you can go find him on video saying to various women who have been a part of his life in various capacities, there's enough there that it was a disqualifier for a number of owners. And if not for the presence of Tom Brady, it would have been a disqualifier there. It was last year. It was for Bruce Arians and Jason Light a year ago. But he brings it on the field. And Tom Brady has been talking for a calendar year now about what it was like that 1 week he practiced with this guy and that one game they played against the Dolphins and what a difference maker it was. And Robert Kraft wouldn't allow him back in that building, but The Glazers have let him in this building, and I suspect on Sundays he gets things done.
JLC joining us. JLC, one last question. The Giants are 1-7. They're right in the battle for the first pick in the draft, or at the very worst, one of the early picks. You saw Daniel Jones again this past Monday night. What do you think? Do they stay with him going forward, or do you think they look at Trevor Lawrence, Justin Fields, or somebody else if they're available when they're picking?
I think it all depends who's sitting in the chair, Jim. If it's still Dave Gettleman, I think he would hold an auction for that pick and try to get a ransom for it, and then say that's how we're going to build around even more Daniel Jones and incubate him. If he's not the GM, I think most guys who come in there, if you're guaranteed Lawrence, you're not finding out what the pick costs. Kind of like the Bengals with Burrow last year, where no matter what Miami or anybody else threw at them, they weren't moving. I think you have to take the player, and then you find out what you can get for Daniel Jones.
He is an NFL insider for CBS Sports and CBSSports.com. Remember, he appears every single Sunday on the NFL Today during the regular season and the playoffs. Co-host of Inside Access on 105.7, The Fan in Baltimore. He is everywhere. Jason, thank you very much, man. Great
Always
job.
Always my pleasure, brother. Have a great week. Thank you.
You too, my man. JLC, one of my favorite people in the business.